So today we are continuing on in our exploring of the supernatural. We have in previous weeks, we have covered angels, demons, the constellations, as well as some of the fantastic beasts involved in the creation of the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash. And this week we are moving into our study of Behemot v'Leviathan, or Behemoth and Leviathan, depending on your pronunciation. So as we look into it, so let's start off by first giving a little bit of direction of what we're going to go into. So we're going to try and focus on several points by looking at several sources within Chazal. So we're going to try and figure out what exactly did each of them look like. Is it possible to find them? As well as some interesting stories where they come up quite prominently in various Jewish scriptures. So again, a plug yet again for Rabbi Natan Slifkin's a book on the topic where I got a lot of the sources from. And also, if you are looking to buy a copy as soon as possible, there is an extra copy available at Israel Judaic, I believe. So if you're looking to get one right away, go there. But also, you can also be ordered from his website as well. Just the post is pretty terrible nowadays. So you might get it by, if you're lucky, you'll get it in time for Rosh Hashanah. So, okay. So what did they look like? So as you may have noticed, I'm sticking around tunnel for a second, is because you notice here, right, what the picture that Rabbi Slifkin chose to use for his book on sacred monsters. So if you want to, so the full version of that is over here. This is actually done by an artist named by the name of William Blank. He did this in the 1820s. He wrote a book of illustrations to go along with the Book of Job, the Book of Eov, to better understand what's going on in the story. And he thought it was very worthwhile to depict what he thought that Behemot and Leviathan looked like, as well as, so here's the story we have God on top. Again, ignoring the fact that whether or not you're allowed to make pictures of God or not, I don't think the guy wasn't Jewish, so don't worry about it. Okay, so, and then depictions of angels on the side, right? One of them is probably Satan. Okay, then we have Eov and his friends, all sitting around here, the middle here. And finally, in the bottom, we have God describing the Behemoth and Leviathan. Okay, this is one possibility for how they look like. We'll see, again, we'll see whether we think this is likely or not. I'm sure people have also seen other pictures of other sea monsters. We could spend hours looking at various pictures, but I figured I'd go with some of the more famous ones. Because if we went through all the pictures if anybody here has, I might be dating myself, but again, everybody here remembers Pokemon. Then you may know that a lot of the creatures look like these. So again, which one of them is most accurately, Behemoth or Leviathan? We'll let you decide as we continue on. And as far as another option for Leviathan that's often used is the comparison of Leviathan to a dragon, just seen here in a painting from the 19th century by Gustave Doré. About the destruction of Leviathan, where God slays the Leviathan, which the story we will also get to in short order, not to worry. So now that we've mentioned a little bit of that, so I want everybody to, hopefully people have in mind that for themselves what they think the Behemoth Leviathan may be. And now we're going to see, again, everybody has their preconceived notions, what they've, you know, they've heard, they've seen, and now we're going to see, look at some of the texts and see what they are. So we're going to start off with Behemoth. So when we say Behemoth, what are we referring to? So we're not referring to Behemoth, also happens to be the Hebrew word for multiple animals, wild beasts. So the question is that what we're referring to? So here's a verse in Tehillim, which seems to be in Psalms, which seems to be talking about the behemoth, potentially Behemoth. It says that God is stating about how all animals are under God's dominion. And then God is saying that for mine is every animal of the forest. And then it says, Behemoth Bahare Elef. right? Then it's, so it's in, which could mean either the beasts upon the thousand mountains, or it could mean the behemoth, which is big enough to cover thousands of mountains. So depending on that, so that's potentially, someone says one source for behemoth. But there's actually, that's not really the true source for what behemoth is. The true source for behemoth, as noted, it comes from the book of Job, the book of Eob. So when does this come up? This comes up after we've had the previous 39 chapters of after the terrible fate that befell Eob as a test from God after having been instigated by the Satan, by Satan himself. God, after everybody's debating, you know, how on earth could God have punished Eob? Did he do wrong? Did he not do anything wrong? A whole very long back and forth philosophical argument, which is much longer than we have time. If some people are interested in hearing Eob, I'm happy to do so as well. Again, if you're again, just let me know. So as part of that, when God is responding at the end, responding about how can you speak back to me? Don't you know, like, and no, and stating God's power and his ability to fulfill whatever he would like. So he gives an example for something that's beyond human capabilities that is fully within God's. So here is the example. Okay, people are always questioning God. How could God do this? How could God do that? And God's like, don't talk to me like that or about that because you guys don't know anything. And not only that, even if you thought you did, let's see, you think that, you know, you're hot stuff. So let me tell you about, you know, a creature that God made. So who would like to read this description of the behemoth? And then afterwards we will see what we can get, what animals we think it might be. I see that the Ghoster Coaster is was waving his hands. Was that a volunteering I saw?
Sure. Where do you want me to start from?
Start from the beginning.
Take now behemoth, whom I made as I did you. He eats grass like the cattle. His strength is in his loins. His might is in the muscles of his belly. He makes his tail stand up like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are knit together. His bones are like tubes of bronze. His limbs like iron rods. He is the first of God's works. Only his maker can draw the sword against him. The mountains yield him produce where all beasts of the field play. He lies down beneath the lotuses in the cover of the swamp reeds. The lotuses embower him with shade. The willows of the brook surround him. He can restrain the river from its rushing. He is confident the stream will gush at his command. Can he be taken by his eyes? Can his nose be pierced by hooks?
Okay, so in this description we have of the behemoth, so what do we know about it? First question, is it an omnivore or is it an herbivore? Carnivore or herbivore, which one?
Sounds like a carnivore.
Looks like an herbivore.
Well, it's something like an herbivore in the sense that it seems to eat. We get mixed messages, right? It seems to eat grass. Yet on the other hand, it seems to be very violent. So it's an animal that doesn't really eat meat, but is supremely strong and scary. What else do we know? Does we seem to know about it?
He can only be killed by God.
Right. Simply can only be killed by God. So would this imply a real, like a creature that you might run into on the when you're going for a nice walk in the dangerous ancient world, or seem like an animal that you probably will never end up meeting based on that? Right. As well as having the bones like tubes of bronze, the limbs are like iron rods. So all these things seem to make this animal be more than physically than beatable. It's unbeatable, seemingly, because this was written, you know, during the at best during the Iron Age, and well, during the Iron Age they weren't really good at breaking things that were stronger than iron. So then when it was written is a separate other discussion. Whether during the Bronze Age or the Iron Age would be depending based on what time, who he's contemporaneous with. Again, there's a discussion in the Gemara, which we are not going to be able to get into this time. But again, a lot of fun things about the Book of Job. But so there's this very big beast. It's extremely strong. And it also seems to have something to do with water, because it seemingly, you know, has power to control the water, which is strange. And it's also, it has a prominent nose, yet its nose is unable to be captured by hooks. Let's say like a fish's nose would be able to be. So what animal might this be? Like, let's throw out some guesses here. What do we think of a big scary animal? What would we guess?
The hippopotamus.
Hippopotamus. Very good. We jumped right to the Travis Lucas favorite one, right? So the hippopotamus. Why would you say the hippopotamus?
It's a vegetarian.
It's vegetarian.
It's large.
It's definitely large.
If it sits in a stream, it can block the small stream.
Right. And that's where it lives. It lives in small streams. Very good. And it's also another part about it. We see how it looks so violent. So in terms of in the past year, more people have been killed by hippopotami than by sharks and lions and tigers combined.
What about a dinosaur?
That's another option. The only problem with it being a dinosaur is that nobody had seen a dinosaur at that point. Meaning, here, so there's two. One option is that this is a beast that God created that is extremely unique that you'll never be able to find. Right? So could the dinosaur be that possibility? It could be. But if, let's say, it's speaking about a beast that the people of the ancient world know of, right, like a physical beast as opposed to, a supernatural beast that you wouldn't necessarily expect to see on a daily basis. Like, you know, people in the world knew about angels, just none of them ever expected to see one because, well, if you're not a prophet, you don't expect to see something that's divine. So, right, one option that's proposed mostly amongst, again, it's been proposed since they rediscovered dinosaurs in the last 200 years, is that maybe it's one of the giant sauropods that, you know, like the Brachiosaurus and the like, that, you know, if you look at that, are, you know, as big as a whole room. By whole room, I mean they're about, you know, 30 meters end to end, almost 20 meters tall, right? They're scary large. But the only problem with that is we'll get to why that might not fit or not. Okay, and also the issue here is that, well, right, so that is a possibility. Just the question is would that have been seen by Job? That's part of the question. So another suggestion people have is an elephant, right? The biggest land animal. Right, so that's also thrown out as a possibility because it's big, scary, and strong, and it's a vegetarian. Right, so all these so far mentioned are vegetarians, which is again seemingly is, you know, would be a somewhere you have to draw the line. So another one that can support the hippopotamus theory is the fact of its tail, because its tail is like cedar. There are many of those who say that it's because if you see a hippopotamus's tail, it's kind of flat and pointless. Meaning that it's not like it's not sharp. It doesn't like bend. It kind of just like goes like, it looks like a piece of wood going like this. It's like really, it's one of the weirdest tails. For more detailed analysis of the anatomy of the hippopotamus and how it fits, you can see Rabbi Slipkin's book, but we're going to move on. I'll move on at this point, right? So we mentioned some of the possible animals that we think might fit this, but that's assuming that it's a real being that we can find. But is that really the case? So let's keep reading and see whether or not we think that that's likely, right? I mean, we threw out a whole bunch of options, but the problem with all those animals are that, well, that even though we suggested those things, so now here's some examples of when the Midrash of Beit Rabba questions what exactly is the behemoth. So what are some of the ideas they come up with? And we'll see whether that lines up at all, or if it sounds like it's something else. Okay, so we have we have two opinions. Who wants to be Rabbi Yochanan Lefi Rish Lakish? Two volunteers, please. Okay,
I'll be one.
Elaine, you'll be Rabbi Yochanan, and Izzy, you'll be Rish Lakish. So alternate paragraphs.
Okay, the behemoth upon 1,000 mountains. Rabbi Yochanan said, it is one animal that rests upon 1,000 mountains, and 1,000 mountains grow all types of grass for its feet. As it says, surely the mountains bring him forth food.
Okay. So now, that was option one. Okay. Next.
He said, let me know.
Go for it.
Reish Lakish said, it is one animal that rests upon 1,000 mountains, and 1,000 mountains grow food that is worthy for the righteous, and it eats it. What is the reason? And the sharing shall be a fold of flocks, according to Isaiah, written in Isaiah 65:10. And the rabbi said, there is one animal that rests upon 1,000 mountains. 1,000 mountains grow different types of animals for it to eat. What is the reason? Where all beasts of the field play in Job. And from where does
back, it drink? Back to Lane.
Oh, that's okay.
So, okay. And from where does it drink? Rabbi Yochanan said, whatever the Jordan brings in over a 6-month period, it swallows in one draft. As it says, behold, he drinks up a river and hastens not, from Job.
Okay, so based on this discussion that's being had by Rabbi Yochanan and by Reish Lakish and the Chachamim and the other rabbis in this Midrash, does it sound like the behemoth is an animal that we would ever meet?
Not at all.
Not at all, right? We're very far from an animal we've ever seen. No animal we've ever seen is big enough to be on 1,000 mountains at a time, right? That is just physically impossible. And as far as what it eats, so we have there's a debate. We seemingly have three options. We've got the classic herbivore, we have an omnivore, and we have a straight up carnivore, right? Depending on which option we want. And to top it all off, as far as its ability to drink water, it drinks whole seas. It drinks like unbelievable amounts. So this is interpreting the drinks of a river as not that he controls the river, but as that he literally is drinking the river. So according to these, well, one issue is that they're all, according to all of them, this is a behemoth, right? It is truly very large in scale and not an animal that you could see. And there's also debate as to whether or not it's vegetarian or whether it's an herbivore or an omnivore or a carnivore, right? So according to all the opinions besides the rabbis who say that it's a carnivore, then it's possible that maybe you could try to squeeze it. You could fit in some of the since they say it's a carnivore, that would knock out all the animals we mentioned last time, but it would allow for there to be another animal that potentially that could be brought in as an option. But for the other ones, in theory, if we had a large enough hippopotamus, it could work, but it doesn't really. But again, we've never seen any hippopotamus this large, so we're still not entirely sure what it is.
Maybe a crocodile.
Right. So crocodile. The problem with that would be a pure carnivore. So that's possible. Just it doesn't fit as well with our description here of it being eating grass like cattle. Because you would never confuse a crocodile with cattle. We'll also see why crocodiles. If you noticed, it's the sinews are knit together, right? So it doesn't have. Right, his tail signed up like a cedar, so that doesn't fit quite well. The crocodiles don't do that. I mean, as far as he lies down beneath, actually, he could still lie down to lotuses in the swamp reeds. And
But they go under the river.
What?
They go under the river. They don't block the river.
Right. Generally, they'd be underneath the river. They'd hide underneath the water. They'd just kind of sit there and squat. Pitamata was a little better because they really do just like block a river. And also the difference is that as far as the nose goes, right? So that there's a very prominent nose on a hippopotamus or on a hippopotamus or an elephant, but there is definitely no prominent nose on a crocodile because its nose is quite small, so you would never really try piercing it with hooks. I mean, it has a huge mouth, but its nose is just two little slits.
Have you had a friend? Rabbi?
Yes.
So going to the previous page that we saw after this one, you know, it sounds almost folklorish in that if it's a behemoth upon 1,000 mountains, surely, number one, we'd have some kind of a tradition that heard of it and saw it, and people wouldn't be as conflicted about it. And second of all, if it could drink a whole river in 6 months, 6 months worth of a river, it almost sounds like not superstitious, but a reason to believe that there was a drought because the behemoth drank the water. Do you know what I mean? It sounds to me more flourish.
Right. It sounds physically impossible. And breaks all lines of reasoning. Correct. So don't worry. That your question is answered by the next midrash. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, go for it.
Are we assuming that this is a real thing because God said that He made it, like he made us?
Yeah.
So we assume that it must be an actual creature. It's not.
We're assuming this creature must have existed at some point in time because God said He made it.
Okay, and we assume that there's only one of them, or there's a group of them.
That's an excellent question. You'd like to read this Gemara that discusses exactly that point.
Okay, and he created even the beasts on the thousand hills, male and female, and they were so enormous that if they could have coupled and produced offspring, they would have destroyed the entire world. What did the Holy One, blessed be He, do? He castrated the male and cooled the sexual desire of the female. And preserved it for the righteous in the future. So it's okay. As it is stated about the beasts, lo now, his strength is in his loins. This is referring to the male. The continuation of the verse, and his force is in the stays of his body. This is the female, alluding to the idea that they did not use their genital for the purpose of procreation.
So would you be able to find two? Were you able to find them?
Well, thank God they didn't find each other. That's all I can say.
Right. They can't find each other. They can't reproduce. And it seems like one of them was castrated and hit off somewhere. Another one was preserved in some way to be eaten later. They put it under a deep freeze, and it's going to be eaten for dinner eventually, the world to come. So as far as would you be able to find...
One second. Yeah. What was preserved? Do you think that the... It sounds to me like
the female one was preserved. It says in the Hebrew is Hanakeva Ushmara, right? So it means that the female was preserved, right? So the male was neutered, so wouldn't try and be violent anymore. The female was preserved in some fashion for the future.
No,
exactly how it preserved, we don't know, but it is left for the future.
But Sinan Anakava.
Right.
It's screened.
Sinan, right? So as in, right? So the question, so as in, so it's here. So Sinan, that's the cooling. That's not the way they preserved it. That's the way that that God froze his ability to reproduce. Because oftentimes the let's say the phrase, when you say the animals are in heat when they are in the mating season. So it's the opposite of that. Right, okay. So the male was castrated. The female had her physical desire, her deprivation removed, similarly, the female was also preserved somehow to be eaten by the righteous in the world to come.
So I read it that their desires were preserved for the righteous later.
So we'll see other midrashim that are a little clearer. As far as what's going on here.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, but as it looks right now, the reason why nobody would have seen this behemoth is because God made two, preserved one, and the other one may have even died out, because if they don't reproduce, who's to say that it's still living, right? So there's one kept in storage somewhere, somehow. How does God do it? That's a good question, which we'll see, which we'll have to get to later. And so the question is what to do with that. So one option is to interpret this Gemara is simply say this is non-literal, right? This is simply stating that this is all a metaphor for the, notice the emphasis on the, this is the opinion of the Rashba, notice the emphasis we had on the physical desires of the sexual desires of the
female, of the
male and the female, and like the castration and the removal of sexual desire from both. So it's actually a metaphor for the for how God's, you know, how by restraining oneself from sexual desire in appropriate circumstances, it can lead to your ability to be in the world to come, and has to how the world to come will not be subject to these desires. So it's entirely done in an allegorical sense. That's one option to explain this passage, but not everybody takes that route. Okay, so one option is you're right. Behemoth, not really. Again, even what God is saying, he's not saying really that it happened with Behemoth. Behemoth isn't real. Rather, Behemoth is an idea, and God is simply using the folklore or common idea and utilizing it to teach a lesson. That is one way of explaining it. But that is not necessarily the only way of explaining it. We'll see more as we go on a little bit further. Okay, so now we've mentioned the behemoth, we've mentioned some of the physical objects where it could be, and now we're going to move on to the Leviathan. So we're already half an hour in. So we won't read necessarily all the sources inside, but we'll get started. So there's a lot of mentions of the Leviathan throughout the Tanakh. So it's mentioned here, these are mentions of the great Leviathan as the sea serpent, right? How it goes with ships, mentioning how God is the one who breaks the heads of Leviathan and gave it as food for those who were in the desert. We also have a verse in Isaiah saying how that God will end up destroying these two different types of Leviathans. The Leviathan, the elusive serpent, and Leviathan, the twisting serpent, as well as slaying the Tanin of the sea. Right? So three different terrible sea creatures. But are these the Leviathan or not? Or is Leviathan just simply a way of referring to large sea creatures that God seemingly has control over and kills them with a whip? So we turn to Eov again. So Eov mentions a lot about the Leviathan. And it also mentions, notice here it says, Nachash Bariach. So we see that the elusive serpent can be interchangeable with Leviathan as we've seen prior. So it seems like maybe the Leviathan might all be one beast, not three separate beasts. So we're gonna have to see what's going on here. And what do we mean that God is playing with Leviathan also? Still very unclear. So as far as description of Leviathan goes, so we have a chapter and a half in Job describing the power and abilities of Leviathan. So I'm going to read here, and have in mind when you're reading it what this makes you think of. Okay, so canst thou draw out Leviathan with a fishhook, or press down his tongue with a cord? Can you put a ring into his nose, or bore through his jaw with a hook? Will he make many supplications unto thee? Will he speak soft words to you? Will he make a covenant with thee? Would thou take him for certain forever? Will thou play with him as if he's a bird? Or will thou bind him for thy maidens? Will the band of fishermen make a banquet for him? Will they part him among the merchants? Can you fill his skins with barbed irons or his head with fish spears? Lay thy hand upon him and think upon the battle. Thou wilt do so no more. Behold, the hope of him is in vain. Shall not one be cast down even at the sight of him? None is so fierce that dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand before me? Who hath given me anything beforehand that I should repay him? Whosoever to the heavens is mine. Would I keep silence concerning his boastings or his proud talk or his faraway words? Who can cover the face of his garment? Who shall come within his double bridle? Who can open the doors of his face? Round about his teeth is terror. Because again, so in the interim there we had a, you know, God saying how, you know, if you can't handle the Leviathan, you can't, then why are you talking back to me if you're scared of, like, I created the Leviathan. Now continuing on about the Leviathan, right? So we mentioned about his teeth, and now we're moving on to his scales are his pride, shut up together as with a closed seal. One is so near to the other that no air can come between them. They are joined one to another, they stick together, and they cannot be sundered. His sneezings flash forth light, and his eyes are like the eyelids of the morning. Out of his mouth go burning torches, and sparks of fire leap forth. Out of his nostrils go smoke, and out of a seething pot and burning rushes. His breath kindles coals, the flame goes out of his mouth. In his necks abideth strength, dismay dance before him. The flames of his flesh are joined together, they are firm upon him, they cannot be moved. His heart is as firm as stone, yea, firm as nether millstone. When he raises himself up, the mighty are afraid. By reason, by despair, they beside themselves. One lay at him with the sword, it will not hold, nor the spear, nor the dart, nor the pointed shaft. He esteemeth iron and straw, and brass as rotten wood. The hour cannot make him flee. Flintstones are turned with him into stubble. Clubs are counted as double. He laugheth at the rattling of the javelin. Sharp as postures are under him. He spreadeth a flashing sledge upon the mire. Make a deep boil like the pot. He make the sea like a seething mixture. He make a path to shine unto him. One would think the deep to be hoary. Upon the earth is not his like. Who is made to be fearless? He looketh at all high things. He is king over all the proud beasts. Okay, I know that was quite a bit. So let's focus in on certain physical features. So one is, where does he live?
In the sea.
He lives in the sea. So, and how about his, what's he covered in?
Scales.
Covered in scales. But what's weird about these scales is that these scales are all super tight together.
Okay.
Right? And also, what happens when he sneezes? Now. Sorry, you're muted, I think. Somebody tried to say something. It's muted. So.
Fire comes out.
Right nowadays, we're afraid of sneezes because they contain COVID-19. But his sneezes are far worse. They literally blow out flamethrowers. Right. Okay, and his teeth. Right, his teeth are many and numerous. Right, and you can't see the gap between them, but there still are so many of them. So based on this description, do we see? And seemingly, no matter what weapons you throw at him, they just simply bounce off his very sturdy hide. So, do we think that you can, that this is an animal that you could survive meeting? Seeing a lot of shaking of heads. Good, right? Does not seem to be an animal that you could fight and win or do anything else with. It seems like an animal that you meet, you die, and then you're like, okay, well, oops. So, but what are some possibilities? So some would say that in terms of imagery, this kind of sounds a little bit like a Nile crocodile. Because the crocodile has many teeth. It has skin that looks kind of like scales, even though it's not scales. I mean, it is scales, but it's not, I mean, like, it's not fish scales, but it is, you know, it looks like scales. Right? So some would try and say that. But the problem is that this definitely looks to be several steps beyond it, because last I checked, I've never seen a crocodile that breathes fire. If somebody has, I'd be really interested to find where that dragon, that crocodile is. I'm sure I could make a very tidy sum of money off of selling it. But, right, so it's like, does not seem like this is an animal that any of us have ever seen. Well, does remind us of certain beasts we've heard of. It doesn't seem like it likely is a beast that we've ever seen. Okay, so as far as... Yes, Somebody,
is there any conclusion to be drawn from the comparison that like the Leviathan has very tight scales and when you compare that with the behemoth, which also had a very tight knit joints.
So that serves to perhaps as a contrast, though. So if you wanted to say that it's based on something that happened, so to put the Leviathan and the Behemoth together as being the Nile crocodile and the hippopotamus, which are often found in the same waters, would be an excellent way to pair them. But the only problem is that the descriptions seem to be far more physically impressive by several orders of magnitude than the crocodile or the hippo. But you're right. Some of the terms do sound the same. And like as far as their skin descriptions of them being very strong and leathery and being impervious to weapons are very much similar.
Okay.
So now as far as the a little more likely sea serpent that we can discuss more as to what it is. For more on that, again, please see Rabbi Slitkin's book for the discussion of sea monsters. But we're going to focus in on the Gemara's interpretation for when it says that God created the Tananim HaGdolim, the great serpents, what does that refer to? So what are these great serpents? So this is the Gemara in Bava Basra. We quoted it earlier also. In regards to the behemoth. So here it's saying there can be some options for what exactly is the this great sea monster, this great sea serpent. So I believe Rabbi Yochanan was a lame. Could you please reprise her? Her videos. Okay. I guess Izzy, that
okay,
could you please?
Okay. I got where am I here?
So there's here in Babylonia, they interpreted this is a reference to the sea Oryx. Right? So they don't think this is a fantastical beast. They think it's a sea creature that they see and they eat. Okay, Rabbi Yochanan says.
This is the Leviathan, the slant serpent. The Leviathan, the tortured serpent, as it is stated. In the day the Lord with his sore and great and strong sword will punish the Leviathan, the slant serpent, and Leviathan, the tortuous serpent, from Isaiah. That's all I have. Do you have?
That's it. Good. Right? So that's right. So there we see. This is a part of creation. God created the Leviathan. And as far as we had all these different verses that were confusing, you know, how many Leviathans are there? Is there one? Is there two? Is there three? Rabbi Yochanan says there is a Leviathan. Right? There's a singular Leviathan, right, that God created. That's one option, right? God created a sea beast. That is Leviathan, right? That's what it is. But that's not the only option. Okay? There's also the question is, right, we're going to get, so maybe there's only one Leviathan. As opposed to we mentioned before, there might be multiple, or it might be a type of other sea beast. Yes, see the cart should raise their hand. Yes.
Hi.
Speak up. I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Maybe it's related to the flame of the ever-turning sword guarding the way to the tree.
So we're saying that's the source of the fire that's coming out of the Leviathan?
Yeah, something very, very, very like from the beginning of time.
Right. So it could be. Just the only issue is with that is that we'll see. There's some stories that'll conflict that, right? But that is a possibility. We're like, so that's fire. Here's fire. Maybe that's an option. But we'll see that the problem with combining that fire with this one is that it seems that the Leviathan, just like we had the story with the behemoth being dealt with early on, we'll have a similar story with Leviathan shortly. So we're going to get to it. Okay. So one option is that it was created, that it was done in creation and it had all these miraculous things that it could do all that time. Right? Perhaps, right, you mentioned, the, right, you said that's the strong sword here, right? So maybe the, you know, God is punishing the, just like the rest of Leviathan is also an embodiment of the fiery sword. And God just decides, I'm taking it back. Could be. But we're going to see another source. It's a question of what it is. So another thing that we were discussing until now, the question of is the Leviathan, what is it? Is it a crocodile maybe? So, but the problem with that is that we have this Gemara in Chulin that says, who here likes eating interesting animals and would like to give it a try? Okay, I see several people are smiling. Anybody smiling like to read? Just, you know, feel free to take it away.
It is taught in a brisa. Rabbi Yossi ben Dermaskit said the Leviathan mentioned in the Bible is a kosher fish. As it is stated, his armor is his pride, and sharpest post shirts are under him. The phrase his armor is referring to his scales, which protect him like armor. The phrase sharpest potsherds are under him is referring to fins with which he swims, which are sharp and project from his underside.
Okay. Right. So what would this imply? So, these physical descriptors said work well with describing the crocodile. The only problem is that those exact same features, the Gemara says, are what proves to us that Leviathan is as a fish. So Leviathan is the fish, we're stuck. Also, if you want to go down the route, let's say what we had before with the behemoth of it being you know, one of the great sea serpents from the Jurassic or Neolithic or the Jurassic or Triassic, or insert your other ick period from millions of years ago, then the problem is that they're not kosher. So right? So it's like, cause they don't have skins, fins and scales. So we're stuck.
Crocodiles have legs under them, and they have claws on them, which correct. Are really sharp, right. like potsherd.
Right. So that would fit well with, let's say, with the description in Eov. But this Gemara does not. This opinion of the Gemara definitely doesn't believe that. Okay. Right, so again, so there is the option of saying if it was referring to physical creatures, that, you know, natural creatures that you'd see, odds are it seems like a hippopotamus and crocodile are the best matches for the behemoth is hippo, and Leviathan could be the crocodile. But the only problem we have is that there's a lot of descriptions we have of there being something of a different type of Leviathan. That's definitely not that. It also has to be kosher, which also is a problem. We haven't gotten to the part yet about how huge it is. I believe that's the next one. I guess I didn't bring that one. But there is where does the one say how huge it is? Okay, sorry, I guess I skipped that part of the Gemara. I was quoting a lot of Bavas, but I skipped that part. But apparently the thing is that the size of the Leviathan is 500 parsangs, which is roughly 400 kilometers, which is really, really, really big. Right? That's the size of, you know, an island, not really the size of a beast. Yes, I see the hand raised. Yes, go, David.
Just a thought. You talk about the fire and the scales and the etc. It could be something similar to a electric eel, a moray eel, where there's that energy, that electricity, which it has the fire, but the size is clearly
a
negating factor.
But right. I had recently that with all, excuse me, I can't remember properly, sonic or whatever technology that they have, they're now able to look down into the depths of the sea, and they're seeing all kinds of things they've never known existed before. And one of the things they reported was this huge, huge, giant, long, going on forever fish that was so far down that they don't know what it is.
Right. So they're having cases of where that fish came up, something called an oarfish. Right? They don't really know what it is because it surfaced and then, you know, then disappeared back down into the depths. But right. So they have been cases, sightings of, you know, where many hundreds of people have seen things that are, you know, like hundreds of meters long or seemingly that long, and that are fish, which is possible. We don't have any physical specimens of them. Blue whales are really big, for instance, right? So they're that's the largest animal that we know of. But again, that's the key part is that we know of, right? There could be others under the sea because we've explored less than I think was it 5% of the sea with any great granularity. Meaning, like, you know, taking a shot from a satellite with it, you know, being able to see, you know, like, you know, geological features is great, but it doesn't really tell you about, you know, the creatures there because the machinery can't pick that up. So you're right, it could be, because we haven't seen it yet is part of the problem. So we'll have to see how that goes. Okay, so we mentioned one option of the, you know, crocodile. And now the problem is that we're supposed to be kosher. So then that rules that one out. As well as a lot of the, so then it could be there's a fish that we don't know that could meet these physical characteristics. We just don't know that yet. Yes, Moshe.
When we leave the sukkah every year, we say that we're gonna that we as an entire nation of Klal Yisrael is gonna eat in the sukkah of the Orosh Leviathan. You've made a definition of 400 kilometers, but I don't think that's large enough.
I mean, I think it is.
To fit all of us in, all 7 million Jews in the world?
The answer is yes, you would definitely fit under 400 kilometer along a beast. You would fit.
Okay. And are we referring to the schach? Because it's not growing from the ground.
So I'm not sure how, again, so we have to figure out the exact dimensions, but the answer is that you could, you could fit here in a square mile, you could fit a million people without a problem. In a square kilometer, you could definitely fit a million people. It wouldn't be comfortable, but you'd fit. So, just saying, like, it's definitely doable. So here we go. So let's see. So as far as that future feast, right? So let's get into it. Okay. So this is the Suda de Leviathan. Right, the meal where we end up eating the Leviathan. So Rava says that Rabbi Yochanan says, in the future, the Holy One, blessed be He, will make a feast for the righteous of the flesh of the Leviathan. Okay, so that's one option. Right, again, so we're all going to eat the Leviathan, which means, again, it has to be kosher. You wouldn't be serving to the, you know, the tzaddikim who spent their whole lives doing what they're supposed to be doing, the wrong thing. That just seems like a little mean. Okay, and not only that, in the future, God will prepare a sukkah for the righteous from the skin of the Leviathan. But unfortunately, if you happen to be not deserving of the honor of being able to sit inside of the Leviathan, you'll get a covering prepared for your head instead, which is called the orange head with fish beards. As it says, you know, ubud sil tzal dagim rosho. So, which is not really the nicest. It's basically like, yeah. So they'll make you a little keep up. You're, you know, not, you know, worthy of being, if you can't make it into the sukkah because you're not worthy of being doing so. So we give you a nice little hat, say, almost made it, and then you'll feel better. Not really. But again, that's the punishment, is that you don't get to join the big party. You get stuck outside with a sad little hat, wishing you had been there. So, okay. So again, but from here, we see there's a very, the Leviathan is central to this meal in the future. So the question is, how did this Leviathan get there? So we have a story that seems very similar to that of the behemoth story we had earlier. There are stories that are actually back to back in the Gemara. Apologize that they are currently separated due to the structure of the shear. Okay, so yeah, the same person before, Yehuda says that basically everything God created was male and female. And even the Leviathan were created male and female. The problem is if they procreated, what would happen to the world? It would be destroyed. So what did God do? He castrated the male and he killed the female, salted the female to preserve the banquet for the righteous in the future. So who here likes herring? Right? So that if you like herring, you are going to love the feast of the world to come, because it is the best herring prepared by God. It will literally be divine. So, right? So, and as far as the, right? So we had to do a similar thing. So there's somewhere in the world wandering a castrated, very sad male Leviathan, and the female is held to be dinner in the future. So according to this, similar we had about the behemoth, the answer is that you would never end up seeing the behemoth ever because, well, where is it to be found? The answer is that it's that the behemoth and the Leviathan are hiding, and their spouse and their mates are currently waiting or still are being slowly preserved and prepared for our eventual dinner in the future. So, which sounds quite tasty, to be honest, but unfortunately, that means that we will not be able to see the Leviathan or the behemoth in our lifetime. So now the question then becomes, so now that we've built up this future feast, which is going to have the delicious behemoth and Leviathan, the best meat you've ever had and the best herring you've ever had, is that really going to happen? So, and when is it going to happen? So when we say the future of the righteous, so that normally brings up the world to come. So who believes that that is a prominent feature of the world to come? So the answer is our Gemara, Rashi, the Rashba, and most of the Rishonim actually, as part of the world to come, say there will be this feast in the world to come with God serving up these delicious delicacies known as these beasts. The Behemoth and the Leviathan. Unfortunately, there's somebody who has a little more depressing view of the world to come, namely the Rambam. The Rambam's view of the world to come is, you get a second chance. Right? Everybody who lived the world right the first time and the second is revived by the Tzviyat HaMetim, by the revival of the dead, and they all get a chance to live again. And then the world continues as normal. So as you can probably tell by the lack of fanfare that I saw on people's faces, as well as by my lack of enthusiasm, but that's not necessarily the most inspiring thing to hear. It's like, you get a second, then it's like, wait, but it's just a second chance. I'll just do it right the first time. Like, I don't get it. Like, why is that something to work towards? Like, why? Like, what? Right? So again, so a lot of people were very angry at the Rambam for saying that, you know, for all the promises of what the world to come would be, and removing this delicious feast from, you know, the world to come is, you know, a problem. So who are the other person who also held of the same opinion is that of his son, Rabbi Avraham ben Aramba. So he's not quite as hardline as his father, as we've heard, as we've seen quoted by him several times. The Rambam's, you know, disdain for those who believe in things that are impossible. But so here we have the words of the Rambam's son. So first he begins by stating that, you know, by giving some background about the Rambam being raised from his youth, and that he really, you know, he knew it, right? He learned all day, and I don't think that he doesn't know his stuff, right? And that, but as far as the concept of would he eventually in the world to come be able to fill his stomach with the delicious flesh of Leviathan? So here is Rabbi Avraham ben Arambam's response. It is certain that our sages of blessed memory only cited these midrashim and their like to engage his interest and the like. Just as we engage in the interest of children in studying Torah in school by distributing sweets and nuts to them, whoever interprets these and similar statements about the Messianic era according to their literal meaning can do so. Whoever attributes a hidden meaning to them and considers them the simple meaning to be an allegory has basis for this. So what is Rabbi Avraham ben Arambam's conclusion? He doesn't make one. He's like, I don't think so. I think it's just kind of like a nice story to inspire you, and that's all it is. Just like a nice little muster schmooze, and maybe a little reward. Just like, you know, the kid learns well. You give him his nice, he'll get his lollipop, he'll get his sweet, or maybe the kid's a little bit earlier. You know, you might roll him with a kiddish, or, you know, all you can eat buffet, right? Insert their favorite food here. But on the other hand, but he's like, he doesn't believe that. But he says if somebody wants to say that, That's okay. I just don't believe that. Right? That's from Yavarman and Rambam. And to be fair, nobody actually knows what's going to happen in the world to come because, well, we're not there yet. So, like, it's unprovable, and we could argue about it from here till tomorrow, but it's still not going to be the world to come. So, kind of left with a little bit of a perplexing point there. But we're going to get to some more. I see we're coming up on the hour here. So here next we have the Midrash Tanchuma, which is discussing how that eventually, how God will make a meal out of both the Behemoth and the Leviathan, and mentioning how there's no mention of a Shechita there. The question is, how is that possible? So, where the question is, how are they going to be slaughtered? Rather, so the thing is, seemingly God's not slaughtering them. And then, how do they end up dying then if God's not doing ritual slaughter? The answer is that they fight with each other. The Behemoth approaches Leviathan and holds him by his horn and splits him. And Leviathan's death will in turn smite Leviathan. So again, Behemoth's primary weapon is his horn, which is also a problem as far as the fact that the Behemoth, you know, being a Potomai don't have horns. Leviathan's dying. It slaps its tail in the face of the Behemoth and then wounds it too. So they both kill each other. Then afterwards, they go and eat it. So yes, there is a problem here of how on earth can you do this? Shouldn't it be a trefa and not kosher? One answer is that, well, neither of these are actually land animals and they're both aquatic creatures. Because fish don't require shechita, you can just bump them over the head or however you want to kill them, and then that's fine.
I was going to go back and say, since when does Judaism allow castration? You know, even
so, only God can do it. God can decide the castration point, right? God can decide if the castration is okay. As far as humans doing it, it is quite complicated. Even castrating, let's say, you know, neutering animals is a very large halachic question if you're allowed to do that or not.
Unless God sold it, maybe God sold it to a goy.
Right. Again, that's another long, long story about neutering. Yes, we would like to share on that. Please let me know how to prepare it. Just let me know.
Does that mean that somebody owns a dog that they're not allowed to neuter it?
Yeah, it's complicated is the answer. We can discuss that. If you're interested in a share on neutering, we can have a share on neutering. We can even call a local vet. Discuss the process. But again, right? Yeah, that's a separate issue with castration of beasts. Can't you do it? When, where, why, and how? And other ways around it. Okay. But I'd like to close by quoting a part of Davening that we get to the last source, then we'll do the summary. So people maybe are typically not so awake when we say this part of Davening, but it is part of Davening that we say every single year. This is known as the Akdamot that we say on Shavuot morning before laning, which is often when people are like really, if they stand up all night, they're very much not awake. And even if you didn't, it's an Aramaic, so you're looking at it, you're like, I have no idea what I'm reading. This is great. But like, I'm just going to go, you know, do something else because like, I have no idea what's going on. But part of that, of the you say on Shavuot morning talks about this story we just mentioned in the Midrash. Leviathan contends with the Behemoth. They are locked in combat with each other. The Behemoth grows mightily with his horns. The sea monster counts with his potent fins. The creator slays them with his great sword. So if you're wondering what happened to the Shechita, the answer is the Midrash solved their problem because God shackled them with his sword. And he prepares a banquet for the righteous who sits in rows of tables of precious stones. While before them flows streams of balsam. Fills himself drink full cups of the precious old wine preserved in vats. You upright, having heard this hymn of praise, may be in that blissful company. You'll merit to sit in the first row if you obey God's majestic words. God exalted from the beginning to the end, was pleased with us and gave us the Torah. Okay, so it is important to follow the Torah and the mitzvot, because if you do so, you will hopefully be able to be part of this glorious feast, where seemingly you'll be eating not just the preserved, herring-eyed Leviathan as well as the however they froze the or preserved the behemoth, and you'll also have the fresh meat as from resulting from the battle between behemoth and Leviathan of the male ones, and therefore you will be having a most delicious feast the world to come. So now let's just again. So that's something to bear in mind when you're reading that demo this coming Shavuos. That look forward to the delicious meal afterwards, assuming you can stay awake for it. Okay, so now let's go over again a little, what we covered today. So we discussed the behemoth and Leviathan. So behemoth, we discussed some options what it could be. Most prominent example we said maybe if it's okay, behemoth. What could it have been? We threw out many examples. Odds are, if it was a real animal, it was the hippo. But then we said the Gemara and Eov add on a lot of descriptions that would seem to go against that notion. And therefore, and also it's supposed to be kosher because we're eating in the world to come at this great feast. So maybe not. Next, we had the Leviathan. We discussed what it could be. If it was a real beast, maybe it's a crocodile. Again, it would pair well with the hippo. But unfortunately, again, Eov, the Gemara, and the Midrash make it sound much fiercer. And also, it's supposed to be kosher. Crocodiles are not kosher. Please don't eat crocodiles. Also, yeah, don't eat crocodiles. yeah, don't do it. Okay, then the question of what happened to the beasts. So one option is, again, if they really are the hippo and the crocodile, the answer is if you want to see them, please go to your local zoo when it opens again, COVID permitting. But the other options are that we have in terms of the eschatological end of days is that combination of God killed off the female for the sake of the world and salt that the female is saved, salted for the world to come. On the other hand, the behemoth and Leviathan, the male ones, will do battle, and then the righteous will be able to dig in the results. But the other option, which is a little bit less inspiring, but again, it is one that is to bear in mind, is that the entire stories of Behemoth and Leviathan are non-literal, but are rather allegories to describe our greater struggle with the physicality of this world. And not that we will literally be feasting on it, but that it is to describe how great the rewards will be for those who truly merit to be part of the world to come. Okay, so that is it for our series on supernatural beings. We have discussed in the last 5 weeks the angels, the demons, constellations, the fantastic beasts involved with the construction of the temple, as well as finally, as God saying, Leviathan and Behemoth. Thank you everybody for coming. And if anybody has any questions now, feel free to ask them.
Go ahead, Chaim. Very good.
Very much. Interesting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Happy Purim, everybody.
Happy Purim. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.